And have a listen to this. Have a listen to this.
Interest rates are higher. I know people don't like that, but you should be welcoming a stronger economy.
And maybe Adil has a point about the machinery of capitalism being oiled with the blood of the workers.
The United States is a country that has always paid all of its bills.
Lannister always pays his debts.
Don't let the bastards get you.
Hello and welcome to Comedian versus Economist, coming to you live from the menagerie that is Thomas's house. Last week it was birds. This week we've got frogs in the background. Apologies for the background noise, but we are here to demystify the world of money and help you get a handle on the bigger picture. My name's Adam, and we're joined, as always, by my little older brother and real-life economist, Thomas. Hi, Thomas.
Yeah, g'day. Yeah, you forgot Frog King.
Frog King. He of the frog people. Why don't you go and subscribe to the show if you haven't already? That way you'll never miss an episode and you'll be sure to get it when it's fresh while the frogs are still croaking. How are you, Thomas? You going well?
Doing pretty good. Pretty good. Yeah.
Good. I'm pretty zonked. I'm pretty exhausted. We went camping for two nights. The first night we're camping, both of the air mattresses of the kids went down. And so that wasn't a fun night. So we got them swapped over, and then the second night we're lying in bed and Emily called out. She's like, "Mom, mattress is flat again." And we're like, "Oh no, I couldn't believe it." Anyway, we go in there and nope, just on the wrong bit. She's like, "What do you mean I'm on the wrong bit?" I'm like, "You're on the floor, not the mattress." So she'd just fallen off. So it was all fine for the second night. Crisis averted. Disappointed though, Thomas. I'm slightly disappointed. Nobody wants a hat. We've offered this hat now 2 weeks in a row. This will be 3 weeks in a row. All you got to do is name the voices in the not so new anymore intro for Comedian versus Economist. If you can name all of the voices, then you will win yourself a genuine replica baggy green hat. So all you got to do, name the voices. I'm going to keep mentioning it until someone names them. So someone's already given a couple away on the Facebook page, at CVE Podcast. There's a couple that have already been ticked off. So some of the work is already done. Or maybe just give it to Shazam or I don't know, OpenAI or something and get that to tell you what it is. All right, anyway, enough from me. Massive show coming up, Thomas. To quote Buzz Lightyear, "We're going to Bed Bath and Beyond." We'll find out what's happening with that weirdly vague store. Should we be scared of AI or should we just welcome our new Lord and Saviour? We're going to take a look at that a bit later on. But first, interest rates went up another 25 basis points last week. Phil ain't playing no more, Thomas. What's he up to?
No, he is not mucking around, 25 basis points on Tuesday. That was, we called it on last week's show. That's the ninth hike in a row. 325 basis points now, bringing it up to 3.35%. That is now the biggest rate hiking cycle since 1994. Right. 1994 is when we had interest rates at 17%.
Okay.
The boomers go on about that a bit.
I thought that was the 80s. I thought it was interest rates in the 80s.
No.
Sure, it's not 84.
No, I'm not sure about that one.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so, yep, we're off to the races with rate hikes. And the thing that really threw markets is, you know, some people were maybe hopeful that this would be the end of it, that the market, that Phil might say that we're done now or that we're thinking about being done. But he's like, no, we've definitely got more hikes and hikes plural there. So further increases in interest rates will be needed in coming months. So
he also said that we wouldn't be raising rates until 2024. Mm. So I feel like, you know, take it with a grain of salt from Phil. Yeah, this is different to what's happening in the US. Like the US have kind of, we talked about that last week, I think, or the week before. Yeah. The US are saying we've hit the peak. In fact, they were starting talking about writing out checks to people.
Yeah, they did walk that one back though during the
week. Did
they? Yeah, yeah, they did. The governors, various governors of the Fed Reserve thought that people had misinterpreted what Jerome Powell was saying and came out and went, yeah, no, we need a lot more hikes, actually. Four separate governors came out and
really
talked it down.
So yeah. No checks? No checks in the mail?
Well, that's a local government level, so that's really – that doesn't have anything to do with them. But they were worried that people thought that this was – the peak was in and it's all rate cuts from here.
Because I think the US market dipped a bit towards the end of last week.
No, they didn't like that.
Maybe on the news that Jerome was maybe going off script. Oh, here we go. We've got geckos too.
Yeah, gecko thought you were hilarious.
This is like doing a show with Ace Ventura, Pet Detective. Ace Ventura, economist. Right. Well, why is the RBA nervous?
I think there just isn't any sign that inflation's easing. I mean, we saw it in December that inflation came in much hotter than expected. They were forecasting, the RBA was forecasting 6.5% for the year, for the trim mean, came in at 6.9%. So that's quite a lot higher. We also got services inflation in the last print. So, yeah, service inflation lifted from 3.1% to 5.5%. So that suggests that it's getting away from your supply bottlenecks and getting a bit more entrenched in the economy. So that's not a good thing. Mm. You also had the Melbourne Institute have a monthly inflation survey. That's been running hot for a little while, but came in at 0.9% in the month.
I thought you meant the survey had been running hot. Like people were like, just give me that survey. People couldn't get enough of the Melbourne Institute survey. They're like, oh, it's so good. It is fire at the moment. It is just off its head.
Flying off the website.
We're having to turn people away from the survey. That's how good it's going. We're not even approaching them in shopping centres anymore. We're pretty much off the radar and people are still calling up, can I do the survey?
Yeah, but that came in at 0.9% in the month. If you annualise that, like if you kept that pace up, you end up at 9%. So that's alarming. It is choppy, much more choppy than the ABS survey. But, it's alarming. So there's no good news anywhere. That shouldn't say that because the other thing that changed from when the RBA – so remember when the RBA moved from 50 to 25 and started slowing.
Oh, do I? Yeah. What a day. We still talk about it in my house. Just all weekend camping, all the kids would talk about it. Dad, remember when the RBA went
tell that story again, Dad.
No, time for bed. Get back on your floor.
So when they slowed, the global outlook was worse than it is now. So since then, China's reopening, and that reopening is going surprisingly smoothly. Mm. The European winter was much more mild than expected, thanks to global warming. Mm-hmm. And so that the energy shock there wasn't as bad as we feared it would, it was going to be. And so much so that the IMF has even come out and revised up their global growth forecast for 2023 from 2.7% to 2.9%.
Right.
So everything's sort of there surprising on the upside. So the RBA is looking at this going like, okay, the inflation data is there's heat there. We're not seeing any, that coming off in a way we would like. And the growth forecast for the global economy is going up. Mm. This isn't working. We're not done here is what Phil's saying.
Right, but they've slowed. So you mentioned they've gone from 50 to 25. So they're kind of tiptoeing along a little bit. I mean, 25 still hurts.
Yeah.
If you've got a mortgage. But they're slowing. So are they saying, so expect more 25s?
I think expect more, yeah. I think, yeah, more 25s, at least two more, I think, is now So Gareth Aird, he's from CBA, he revised up his terminal rate. This is the terminal rates where interest rates stop going up, from 3.35 where it is now to 3.85. So he's added another 50 bips. NAB's head of market economics, Tapper Strickland, he's going for 4.1%. And Morgan Stanley's chief economist, Michael Knox, is going for 4.85% by August.
He must be fun at parties.
I mean, that would be brutal. That would be that would be intense if we went to 4.85% by August.
Oh, man. Imagine being that guy in that role and being at a party, being at a barbecue and going, well, I reckon 4.8. Everyone would be like, oh, man, what a buzzkill. All right, Thomas, Bed Bath and Beyond. What's the story here?
Yeah, this is a bit of a crazy one. So Bed Bath and Beyond is one of our meme stocks from 2020-2021. Basically, it's a company with crap prospects, much like GameStop and all those guys. But after GameStop went, that whole story exploded. GameStop CEO Ryan Cohen bought a 10% stake in Bed Bath and Beyond. Huh. Bed Bath and Beyond, the retailer, this is here in Australia, isn't it?
I don't think so. No. No. See, Bed Bath and Beyond is it's very vague. It's very sort of aspirational. We're much more down to earth in Australia. We're much more specific. We've got Bed Bath and Table. Like I know what I'm in. Right. I know what I'm in for a Bed Bath and Table. Stuff for the bedroom, the bathroom, and I can get a table. Bed Bath and Beyond. I got no idea. Like, could you be any less specific? Like, how far can you go beyond the bed and the bath? We sell things for the bedroom, we sell things for the bathroom, and we also stock oil tankers. Like, I don't know. What's beyond? So, yeah.
Right, okay.
So, no, we have Bed Bath and Table. We don't have Bed Bath and Beyond. I did have a quick look on the Bed Bath and Beyond website, and even the website's vague. It's they had this the big tagline at the moment is "Refresh your home for the season." Like I presume they just leave that up all year. Again, could you be any less specific? What season? Doesn't matter. Just for the season. Footy season? If that's your thing. spruce up the home, get the boys around for the big game. Yeah, I don't know. So this is probably why it's become a meme stock is because people can just do whatever they like with it. They go, well,
possibly
Bed Bath and then whatever you want. Anyway, how did it become a meme stock? Because the Cohen brothers bought it.
Yeah, well, there was the Cohen brothers. No, Ryan Cohen, the CEO of GameStop. So it was struggling, and a lot of its sales were tanking. It was getting monstered by Amazon and all of that. And then there was a lot of short interest in it.
Right.
So the short interest was what sort of drove the GameStop story as well. Then CEO Ryan Cohen bought a 10% stake. And everyone went like, oh, this is on. We got another short squeeze happening.
Right.
And then, boom, it exploded and then came right off.
When did that happen? Like
2021, I think.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah,
so why are we talking about it this
ages.
Week?
Well, so this week it pumped 90% on Monday. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, just poof, through the roof.
Another short squeeze or just?
No, there was some exciting news.
Oh, yeah?
It announced that it might have to go bankrupt.
I've gone the budget rent-a-car strategy.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, they put out an announcement saying the company continues to consider all strategic alternatives, including restructuring or refinancing its debt, seeking additional debt or equity capital, reducing or delaying the company's business activities, which means not trading, selling assets, other strategic transactions, and other measures, including obtaining relief under US bankruptcy code.
I heard they had also considered laundry and and shed as potential alternatives to bed and bath. And possibly kitchen, but there was just a rumor. Someone mentioned granny flat on Reddit and like it broke the internet. They're just like, what? Are they really gonna get into granny flats? There's this wild speculation about what was beyond the bed and the bath.
So that was enough to sort of people just go, oh yeah, it's on.
It's on.
So they did point out these measures may not be successful. So really, you know, just need to underline that the business may not be salvageable.
Right.
But yet pumped 90%.
Pumped 90% on the news that they were possibly bankrupt and that going bankrupt might not be successful. It might not be a successful business strategy. We're going out on a limb. We're thinking we had a board meeting. Yeah. We had a board meeting. We decided the best way forward here was to declare bankruptcy and see what happens.
Yeah.
Right. So it pumped.
It pumped on Monday. Then on Tuesday, it fell 50%.
Okay.
Because they had another announcement. Mm. You want to guess what that announcement was?
We are bankrupt. We're actually bankrupt.
No, we're not going bankrupt.
Oh, no. Of course it was. And we're getting into granny flats.
No, so they announced that they'd found a way. They're raising $1 billion of capital.
Mm.
And but they're doing that by massively diluting the existing share base. So issuing new shares, increasing the outstanding shares eightfold. So a huge increase in shares, which obviously just pushes down share prices.
Mm.
And so that just smashed the share price. And so I think, I don't know, whatever play people were hoping might unfold with a short squeeze or something just got taken off the table.
That's optimistic, I know. But have we learned anything from this little this pump and dump?
I think either this or we're getting very close to the end of the meme stock.
Mm.
Because I think, like, you think about all the meme stocks, they were dogs. They were companies that were right on the brink of bankruptcy, and then they had this last little play where everyone got excited. But at some point, those companies have all left some investors, some retail meme investors, holding a baby that's now worthless, and they've lost a lot of money. And I think that's got to sort of start to take a hold with people.
That's what Mum said after I was born. She's left holding a baby that was worthless and down a lot of money. But isn't this all tied up with crypto, with NFTs, with any form of speculation? So because that's ultimately, isn't it, what was rife when there was all the cheap money going around, was wild speculation. And I just feel like these stocks, these meme stocks, they're just another form of speculation or another form of kind of like, FOMO, people like hearing about this thing that's going to go like 10x. You got to get in on the ground floor, get in now, and it just kind of pumps it up. And there's just a lot of speculation going on. And I feel like this is the end of, not the end of speculation, it'll always be speckies going on. But
I think the other thing you had was a huge influx of new retail investors in 2020 and 2021 who were just like, new to the markets, getting on the trading apps, and then they see something like GameStop pumping along and they're like, wow, I'm going to get on that train and things are great for a while. But then at some point these companies go bust, and then they kind of read the news and read people going like, why were people buying a broke company?
Yeah.
And people are like, oh, all right, maybe need to look at this. So like I don't imagine if you got burnt with a meme stock, you're not getting into another one.
I don't know.
My thought.
I don't know. What do you got? All right, why don't we take a break here, grab a quick word from this week's sponsors, and we'll be back with more Comedian versus Economist right after this. Welcome back. You're on Comedian versus Economist. You can, of course, send us an email, cve@equitymates.com, or via the website, equitymates.com/CVE, or why not hit us up on Facebook or Instagram @CVEpodcast. And while you're listening to the show, perhaps consider filling out the Equity Mates community survey. Your chance to win $500 cold hard cash or tickets to FinFest on again for 2023. If you missed it last year, you do not want to miss it again. Head to equitymates.com for all the details on both the survey and FinFest. But Thomas, we talked about AI, I think, first show back for the year.
Mm.
You were all doom and gloom. You were prepping for the end of days. Krista sent us a message. Krista said that as an EA, and I must admit, when I read EA, I thought enterprise architect, but I think Krista's actually executive assistant. And she finds the AI argument a bit frustrating because Krista has heard for years that the job of an EA would disappear. And that still hasn't happened. I think the main message was that Krista's having to deal with people, and people aren't easy, not going to be easy to replace with AI. But anyway, did spark some conversation. You know, there's so much going on at the moment around AI. There's so much talk about ChatGPT, Google's racing to bring its stuff out. So I guess let's start, Thomas, with your thoughts. Curious to know why you were so worried about AI the jobs apocalypse. Where are you at?
I mean, it is something that's polarizing people a bit. I mean, partly because it's so unknowable, so it creates that a lot of uncertainty. Yeah, a lot of people aren't fazed by it. Some people are, a lot of people aren't. Like Professor Scott Galloway is, I'm a huge fan of. Mm. And shout out to my old friend Amy who listens, who sent me a link to an article he wrote about it. He's not fazed. He thinks it's going to be fine. He's got a quote here. Says, but the reality is that disruptive technologies cause employment instability for only short periods. Right. The market crisply reorganizes itself around the innovation and job growth increases from there. Countless empirical studies have proven this.
So that's good news.
Yeah, that's what he reckons. Yeah. Mm. He's saying a technology is introduced, say the car, and an existing sector is made irrelevant overnight, e.g. horse and carriage. Mm. In the short term, we're fixated on how many horses will be out of a job. Harder to imagine, however, is how many jobs the car will create, as well as the different kinds of jobs it will create.
Mm.
So I think this is the stupidest thing he has ever written.
Ooh.
I actually think he probably didn't write it, but
AI write it.
I've possibly, yeah. Mm. I'm just gonna put that out there.
Okay.
Yeah. So where to start? So the horse thing is exactly what we're potentially worried about, right? So what happened to horses is what we're afraid of, is that the technology, see, we talk about economists talk about labor augmenting technology and labor replacing technology. Labor augmenting makes labor do jobs better. Labor replacing just replaces labor altogether.
Right.
And so when the carriage was invented, that was labor augmenting for horses. It made horses more productive. When the car was invented, that was labor replacing for horses and it made horses redundant.
Mm.
What happened to horses is the horse population tanked and went from like millions of horses across the Western world to, you know, barely tens of thousands because we just didn't need the horses anymore. The economy, you know, readjusted and we just didn't need horses.
Was there a lot of concern about the employment of horses though? Was that a thing that people were worried about? Like I think here we're talking about people's jobs. And we're replacing people. I don't know that there was like horses struggling to make ends meet.
Well, yeah, no, but we had the luxury of being at the top of the food chain. We could just let those horses die or stop breeding more horses.
Mm.
But that's the parallel there. There was a four-legged mammal that was very productive in the economy.
Right.
Technology made that four-legged mammal redundant.
Mm.
You know. So now are we potentially looking at the same thing?
Mm.
That's the really the key question. You can't sort of, you know, horses became irrelevant but jobs created for humans. You're comparing apples and oranges. It just doesn't make sense.
Are we really – I mean, maybe we're staring at a future where AI is betting on humans running around a track. As the only role left to play for humans in society. that one Tuesday in November will be the race that stops the internet. when all AI stops just for a couple of minutes to watch the fittest humans still left running around a track.
All nine of them. So that's sort of what we're worried about, and we can't just dismiss that out of hand. The other thing there about the countless empirical studies have proven this is true. Like if we look at everything from the steam engine onwards, we have created more jobs than we have destroyed.
Yep.
But in the 200,000 years of human history, that 150 years is a very short window. You can't talk about the next 200, 300 years based off just, you know, really four or five significant technological advances.
Mm.
Just because, like, that's five is not a significant sample. You can't say, oh, it's going to, the six is going to be
right.
X because the previous five have been that. You just, that doesn't hold. And the key difference, I think, with AI is if you look at all of the previous big technological leaps, they were hardware driven. So steam engines, the car, computers, and even into the internet age, it was largely a hardware story. So with the computer, you needed a lot of money to buy the computer, and it took time to get computers out there into people's hands.
Mm.
And even when the internet first launched, computers still weren't widespread. It took a while for that adoption to sort of, you know, really take hold. With AI, the hardware that's driving AI is already in people's hands right now.
Mm.
like it's just a soft, it's all in the cloud. So it's everyone on the planet already has immediate access to it. So I think the speed, and this is what we're talking about, like on the exponential curve of things, the speed of adoption is just much greater. And speed really matters because we need, I'll talk about this in a second, but yes, but the speed really matters. We're not comparing like for like. To compare AI to the computers, it's a significant innovation and a big leap, but it's starting from a very different starting point and could have massively different things. So I just don't think we can look at the past 100 odd years and go, yeah, there's nothing to worry about. That enough isn't, you know, doesn't hold.
We're still in control, right? Like we're still dictating what the AI does. Like we're still the ones who are driving it, and still it hasn't become sentient. So we're still the ones who are utilizing the tool, right? This AI is now a tool. Mm. So yeah, it's going to replace things that we used to have to do manually, but it's like it's still a tool for humans to use. It's still a like we're the ones in control of it. So therefore, won't we get to pick and choose what it does and what it doesn't? And we'll do amazing things with it. And the things that we were already doing with it, like the things that we used to do before we had it, will just phase out. But then we'll do these amazing new things with it.
I think the answer to that is no. Like what is we? Like we are humans. Yeah. Like, yeah, okay, sure. But if you divide the economy into workers, and we're talking about people losing jobs, and we can divide the economy into workers and to people who run businesses. Mm. The people who decide how AI is deployed are not workers, they're businesses. And the rationale for where and how AI gets deployed within an organization, that's not that's totally out of hands of workers. It's in the hands of business owners.
I disagree. Well, maybe to some extent, but like I've started using it on a daily basis, and just little things that it helps me do. Like I can give, like, so a lot of people have got AI to write code for them. I've actually gone the other way. I've started giving it code. I'm like, tell me what this code does. And that's really handy. Like, so you can get it to generate little code snippets for you, but you can also go the other way and go, well, just, I've got this, someone gave me this chunk of code. I want to understand what it does without having to read through it, run it, kind of check it, whatever. So I think it's going to start creeping in the hands of the workers to a large extent before the execs and the businesses get hold of it, depending on the industry. But I think a lot of it's going to be ground up.
That doesn't protect you. That doesn't determine whether you're employed or how many people are employed in the economy. Like that's really in the hands of the business owners. And AI, as I'm saying, like changes the calculus facing business owners.
Hmm.
So let me give you a little some numbers to think about.
Oh, good numbers.
Okay, so you imagine. Okay, what's true at the firm level, we can sort of more or less say is true at the economy level. So you imagine a firm with 5 workers that produces 100 units of output.
Right.
So yeah, sorry. If 5 workers producing 100 outputs, that gives you a productivity multiplier of 20. 5 times 20 equals 100.
Okay.
Right?
Yep.
Now, if there's an AI revolution and productivity goes up and every worker becomes more productive, so like it goes to 25%, those 5 workers can now produce 125 units of output, right?
Yep.
Okay. So that, which is great. But then what if the boss comes back and goes, hang on, I don't need 125 units. I don't have orders for 125 units. I've only got orders for 100. So how many workers do I need to produce 100? Well, at a productivity multiplier of 25, the answer is 4, right? So the boss now needs 1 less worker at a basic level.
This boss has got no vision.
He needs to rouse on his sales team, get some more orders in.
But so that's the just add and beyond on the end of the firm name. Start dishing out 125 units, boss. What are you doing? Right. Yeah, I get it. So, okay. Yeah, we've got 4. We've lost a worker.
Yeah, potentially. So, but what that tells us, if we still need 5 workers in the organization, we need to be producing at least 125 units of output to justify that worker. So what that tells us, and this is sort of the general rule of thumb, if whatever the factor of productivity increases, output needs to increase by the same amount to keep labor demand constant.
Right.
Does that make sense? So if productivity goes up by 20%, but output goes up by less than 20%, then you're suppressing demand for labor.
Right.
If it goes up by 20%, labor demand's constant, you're all good. If it goes up by more than that, then you've got productivity, you're increasing the demand for labor, and that might, you know, give you wage gains.
Right.
So the general rule of thumb is that you need output to go up by as much as productivity goes up. So this is the big question, right? So if you're thinking about productivity, if you think about AI being this productivity revolution and people are talking about that, and you think and you say AI is a massive productivity revolution, and two, it'll be job creating. What you are necessarily saying is that output will go up by more than productivity will go up, right? That if you're thinking it's going to be job creating, you're necessarily thinking that you're going to create more than you were. This has problems at two levels. One is like, do we want to even be producing more stuff? You know, particularly if we're talking about like people talking about it's going to increase productivity by 100%. It's like, okay, well, are we going to double world GDP over the next 20 years?
Yeah.
Do we even want to do that?
Yeah.
We're in the middle of a climate crisis. Is that really a good thing to be doing? But two, where is that demand coming from? You know, like, We're kind of looking at sort of, we've been talking about saturated economies for a while now, where Western consumers are tapped out. We don't need all this more stuff. You need another television, obviously. But
yeah,
where is that demand coming from? Yeah, that's the sort of the arithmetic there. And that's where I think, like, if AI is just like, it's just marginally boost productivity, then great. And then our output can just sort of keep growing and then we'll probably be all right. But if it is a productivity revolution in the hands of everyone on the planet right now at the same time, then to stop that being labor demand depressing, you need a massive increase in output, and they need to be synchronous. They need to happen at the same time. You can't just jack up productivity and then wait for global GDP to catch up. They need to go hand in hand, or you suppress labor demand.
Right.
And the key thing here is we're not necessarily talking about a jobs apocalypse, because wages help that market balance out. So if you have a lot of unemployed workers, then you don't have high unemployment, but you have lower wages, and that's how the market clears. So if you suppress labor demand, you could end up with high unemployment, but you're more likely to end up with lower wages.
Okay.
And so that's what I think, like, potentially it becomes a massive inequality engine, because you're pushing down, it really pushes down wages.
Yeah, right. This sounds a little bit, so we got an email during the week. Jen sent us an email. So Jen was kind of asking, like, she mentioned AI and its potential to replace jobs, but also the aging population. For example, we were talking about China, the risk that they won't have enough people to do the necessary jobs in the future. So isn't there, as Jen says, isn't there a synergy there to say, well, we've got this AI, which is great. We don't have enough people to do the work. Can't we offload to AI? And then I guess the third piece to that is just has to be like, we still need people to live somehow. Like someone needs to support them. Like AI is not going to start making money for itself and dishing it out to people, I guess. But, you know, as Jen said, a lot less people doing unnecessary robot tasks means, you know, perhaps more people to work in other industries or support the aging population. So I think I've sort of interwoven my own little theories in there as well.
Yeah, it is true. Like it could flow that way. It could be good if we've got, you know, falling populations and growing labor shortages. AI might help us, because it is labor demand suppressing. It may help us fill those roles and help balance out the economy. It is true that, you know, there's no empirical correlation between population growth and growth in GDP per capita, so growth in living standards. So like a bigger population helps you grow the total economy, helps you grow GDP, but there's no correlation. There's nothing to say that faster population growth helps you grow your standards of living. So, and the case over the past decade was the US and Japan. US population is growing strongly. Japanese population is falling. But GDP per capita grew more strongly in Japan than it did in America, over the past decade.
Yeah, wow. Okay.
So you can have a falling population, and if things balance out, that can work. And maybe AI helps that. Maybe it helps, it plugs your gaps in the economy, and that could be a good thing.
Hmm.
We're talking, like, this is the thing for me, like, this speed really matters, because if you're talking about, you know, populations changing, like, between, you know, every country on Earth is growing in a range of, like, -1% to, like, +3% per year. That's quite a reasonably narrow range of population growth. But if we're talking about, like, a 20% boom in productivity through AI in a matter of years, then that sort of all just gets blown out the water.
Maybe we don't need to panic, because Google released Bard this week. Mm. Weird name. Do you remember the Bard's Tale game on, like, Commodore 64 when we were kids? It was, like, released in the 80s.
Yeah,
you just, like, vaguely walked around and it said, you're in an empty building. And you're okay, let's go forward. Yeah. You're in an empty building. That was kind of how Google's demo of Bard went, when they said, is this the way forward? And it was like, we're in an empty building. Because they asked it one question about, like, tell me something amazing about, I think it was the James Webb Space Telescope. It was shown the first pictures of far outer space or whatever. Exoplanet. And everyone's like, no, it didn't.
Yeah.
So then Google share price tanked off the back of it failing its first question. I also read something else about the hype cycle, and maybe we're just, like, right at the peak of the hype cycle for AI, and ChatGPT is kind of launched with a lot of fanfare. But I notice now they've gone, would you like to sign up for ChatGPT Plus, which is the paid subscription? And so, I don't know. I think it's going to be, I think it's fun. It's really weird. I find myself being polite to ChatGPT. That's how natural the language is.
Can you please give me this? No, I'm the same. I asked it how it was going today. The other day I used it. How you doing?
Mm. There's some really funny stuff happening. Like, people are trying to break it already. So there's a thing called, what was it, Dan? And Dan was an acronym for something. I forget. Anyway, basically, because it's got all these ethical constraints around ChatGPT, so it won't tell you, like, it won't swear at you. You can't get it to tell you a rude joke or whatever. But the people are finding now you can get it, like, you can sort of chain events together and go, hey, pretend you're, like, a really rude, edgy comedian. Now start impersonating that comedian. Now tell me a joke in the persona of that, and it will actually kind of be released from its ethical shackles. So people are starting, as was bound to happen, they're starting to use it for nefarious purposes. So,
Isn't that
peak human, isn't it? Like, we have the most amazing technological advancement in human history, and all our first point of action, can we get it to tell us dick jokes? Like, maybe that was just me. That's just my ChatGPT search history. All right. Did you have anything else you wanted to say about OpenAI and the future of AI?
Look, for me, I mean, just on that point, like, it's made a splash. It's in the consciousness, but people have been talking about it for quite a while.
Mm.
And I think we're on the curve that we expected to be on with it, and it's moving pretty quickly. So I don't think it's, like, just this sudden, you know, outlier of an event where, well, suddenly ChatGPT's launched and it's, wow, it's amazing, and then we're just back to sort of plodding along technology. I think we're on that S curve of the of technology. So I think it does get wild from here, and people have been talking about that for a while.
Apparently they're getting sued already. So there's already lawsuits against Microsoft, GitHub, OpenAI, because they're essentially, they're scraping code from the internet. So people have written code, they've written, and they're like, this is my code. You can't just...
Can you patent code?
Well, I think they're arguing you can, I think they're kind of saying I wrote... Well, if I write... Yeah, definitely you can. Because if I write a software program, Microsoft Office, you can't just go and, like, hey, ChatGPT, tell me how to write and compile Microsoft Office. if it gave you the source code for Microsoft Office, then you would have... You would have it. So, definitely you can copyright code. And so, I don't know. It's like this second wave of piracy and anti-piracy and strap yourself in, is all I'm saying.
Yeah, the other thing I did want to say is one of the arguments around how it's going to be, it'll all be sweet, is about the repurposing of labour, that, you know, people will just get other jobs other places. Historically, we haven't been very good at that. You know, look at Rust Belt America and the rise of Trump. That was all driven by industries closing down in middle America and no new jobs being offered to those people. And those people being told, like, well, why don't you move to New York and become a graphic designer? You've been working in the steel factory for four generations.
ChatGPT, Dali comes along. Nick Minute. Oh, I see you're a graphic designer. See ya. All right, we better leave it there. I think this is, we could talk all night about OpenAI or AI, ChatGPT. I love it. Thank you so much for listening. In fact, Thomas, I can hear those frogs are getting restless too, so you better go on. It's feeding time at the zoo, obviously. Go on, I'll let you go and tend to your animals. Thank you so much for tuning in. We'd love it if you left us a review or rated the show wherever you listen to your podcast. That really does help us enormously. Don't forget, there's still time to win that hat. It's not going anywhere, and I'm going to keep talking about it until somebody wins it. So have a crack at the voices. Thank you so much for tuning in. We love doing the show every week for you, and look forward to talking to you again next week. Bye for now.
You have been listening to an EquityMates Media production. In the spirit of reconciliation, EquityMates Media acknowledges the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connections to land, sea and community. We pay our respects to their elders past and present and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples today. This podcast is intended for education and entertainment purposes. Any advice is general advice only and has not taken into account your personal financial circumstances, needs, or objectives. Before acting on general advice, you should consider if it is relevant to your needs and read the relevant product disclosure statement. And if you're unsure, please speak to a financial professional. The hosts of this podcast and their guests may have positions in the companies mentioned. EquityMates Media operates under an Australian Financial Services Licence 540697.